snacks, it's time to start the show. Animal facts, animal snacks, with your hosts Elise and Nicole.
Welcome to Animal Facts and Animal Snacks.
That's Nicole.
And that's Elise.
Today we're talking about tigers.
And our snack today are brownies with a orange cream cheese topping, and we like swirled it around to make marbly tiger stripes, and they're delicious.
Nicole outdid herself. These are phenomenal. So if I can't answer questions at any point during this podcast or talk, it's because my mouth is full of brownie.
Okay, Elise, so you are a tiger expert and you have a passion for tigers, so why don't you start off by just telling us some like information about tigers, their classification, and like, what's a tiger?
So I wouldn't say tiger expert. I've been working with tigers for a number of years now. I think everybody's at least seen a tiger. I don't think this is an animal no one's heard of before, but a tiger is the largest cat species on the planet, so they're even bigger than lions. Tigers can weigh up to 800 or sometimes even 1,000 pounds, so biggest feline on the planet. Their teeth can be 4 to 5 inches long. They can have claws as long as house keys. So just to give you some sort of perspective. And these are classified as big cats like lions and leopards, cougars, all those other animals that you think of as large cats. They're technically big cats. And tigers technically share all but 4.4% of their DNA with domestic cats. So they're actually very, very similar to the kittens you'd have at home, just on a much bigger scale.
Yeah.
And they can live in many more habitats. Instead of just your living room, tigers can live in swamps and grasslands and taigas and rainforests. So many different habitats all over the world.
So where do tigers live then?
Tigers live on the Indian subcontinent, throughout Southeast Asia, and in the Russian Far East. But actually, unfortunately, over the last 100 years, tigers have lost 93% of their historic range. So they don't live in nearly as many places as they used to.
Oh, wow, that's terrible. I actually read a fact that about 100 years ago, there were approximately 100,000 tigers, and now we're down to about 3,200 living in the wild.
Yeah, there unfortunately aren't that many left, which is such a shame because they're such a charismatic, amazing creature.
Okay, so obviously everyone knows what a tiger is. We've all seen a tiger, right? But I had no idea that there were so many different subspecies. So it looks like there were at one point 9 different subspecies going into the 20th century, but now we're down to 6?
Yeah, that's correct. So 3 subspecies of tigers, unfortunately, are already extinct. The Javan tigers, Bali tigers, and Caspian tigers. The tigers that are still living are the Sumatran, Bengal, Malayan, Amur, Indochinese tigers, and then the South Chinese tigers are still living, but they're extinct in the wild. So we still have 6 subspecies in the world today. But interestingly, the science is constantly changing. So tigers are divided into subspecies just like any other animal based on how they look, where they live, their ecology, and now, thanks to modern science, they're divided into different subspecies based on their DNA and their molecular structure. So because of all this new research that's coming out, people now think that tigers are actually only 2 different subspecies.
Whoa.
So scientists recently just smushed all of those 6 subspecies into only 2 subspecies. So there's a mainland tiger, which is the Bengal, Malayan, Amur, Indochinese, and South Chinese tiger are all technically 1 subspecies now, even though they don't have much inbreeding since they're separated by so many thousands of miles. And then technically the only other subspecies of tiger is the island tiger, which would be the Sumatran tiger since they live in Indonesia on the island of Sumatra.
Wow.
So yeah, we still think of them as 6 subspecies, but there's technically only 2 now.
That's really interesting. So I'm not a scientist, so I obviously can't do DNA testing to tell these tigers apart, but assuming we are still pretending there are 6 subspecies, how would I be able to tell one from the other?
So they all look quite different. The easiest way to tell them apart is if you're traveling and you know what country you're in, that's the subspecies you're looking at.
What if I'm at the zoo and I can't read the sign that tells me exactly what subspecies they are? What if we're doing a podcast and I'm asking you questions? Then how could I tell?
So they all look a little bit different. So the Sumatran tigers are the smallest subspecies, and they're the brightest orange with the most stripes, and they have the biggest facial ruff. So male Sumatran tigers will grow a faux mane. It's almost like a lion's mane. So their cheeks and their jaw line basically gets very, very fluffy. Amur tigers, which used to be called Siberian tigers, are the biggest subspecies of tiger. They can get up to 800 or 1,000 pounds, as opposed to the Sumatran males who only get up to about 300 pounds. And the Amur tigers are much, much lighter color orange with fewer stripes and a much sleeker face. No facial ruff.
Okay. So you're talking about orange tigers, but what about the white tigers?
So white tigers actually aren't a separate subspecies. Being a white tiger is actually a recessive gene. So having blonde hair or blue eyes are both recessive traits. So dominant traits are things like brown hair and brown eyes. So both of your parents have to have recessive traits in order for you to have a recessive trait. So being a white tiger is something that happens very rarely. I think you were actually reading a statistic.
Yeah, 1 in every 10,000 tigers are a white tiger.
Which is crazy.
I actually thought that all Siberian tigers were white because they live in the snow. Fun fact, I'm completely wrong. That's not the case at all. Right. Actually, mostly the Bengal tigers are the ones that are white.
Yeah, so
I have no idea.
Any tiger can be a white tiger. It's just a recessive gene. Circuses and zoos in the past tended to breed white tigers because they're really impressive looking, and they tended to breed the Bengal tigers and the Amur tigers to proliferate that white gene because those were the biggest types of tigers. So if you had this humongous tiger that was also white, it was doubly as impressive.
And also cross-eyed probably, right?
Also probably cross-eyed with some hip dysplasia. So
wow.
That's the reason zoos and circuses don't breed white tigers anymore. That recessive white gene is also accompanied by a lot of health problems.
Yeah.
So a lot of the white tigers that you still see in zoos are actually very, very inbred in order to keep propagating that gene. They had to breed cousins with cousins and siblings with siblings, so there's all of these health problems now that accompany that white
really
tiger
sad.
Gene. But any tiger can be white. It doesn't just have to live in the snow.
So, yeah. So, I've also seen pictures of these tigers that are more of a strawberry color. They're like white tigers with this goldish orange stripe. And these are the tabby tigers. And that's also a recessive gene that causes this. Are there other orange variations of tigers?
So the Amur tigers are much lighter color of orange because they do live in a very snowy landscape. They live in the Russian Far East along the Amur River. So they used to be called Siberian tigers, but that was misleading. That made people think that these tigers lived all across Siberia. But actually, those tigers only live on the Amur River, which borders Russia and China. So these tigers live in this snowy habitat, so they don't want to be bright orange because they need to camouflage into a snowy, sort of sparse habitat. Sumatran tigers and Bengal tigers, Malayan tigers, are much darker color of orange because they live in a lush green habitat, normally a mangrove forest or a rainforest, and they need to camouflage. And orange is actually a camouflage color. These tigers.
Yeah, which is also funny because I really thought that tigers were just showing off by being orange because they didn't need to camouflage. They're like top of the food chain. They can be orange if they want. Who cares if someone sees them, right? But then I read that most of their prey is pretty much colorblind, so they don't even know that they're bright orange. So when it's nighttime and they're going through all this high grass, their stripes actually kind of mimic the shadows of this tall grass, and they're actually really hard to see at night, assuming that you can't see bright orange.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, most prey animals, most animals in the world can't see bright orange. So there aren't very many animals that can see in color. Primates see in color, birds see in color, but tigers primarily eat deer and other hoofed species, which only see in shades of gray. And if you look at a color wheel, orange and green are across from each other on the color wheel, which means they are the same shade of gray if you only see in black and white.
Whoa.
So to a deer, a bright orange tiger is the exact same color as a bright green rainforest.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so they doubly camouflage. Not only do their stripes break up their outline and make them hard to see, but their color actually completely fades into the landscape.
I wonder why evolution didn't just make them green.
I don't know. I think green is a really hard color to make. The only animals that I've seen that are actually green are like birds and
birds,
fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of all these different types of tigers that we can have and different variations and genetic modification, is it true that you can have a liger or a tion? You yeah. really breed a tiger and a lion?
You really can. They're close enough genetically that you can breed those two species together.
It wouldn't happen in the wild because they have such different social dynamics. They live often in different places, different habitats. If tigers and lions overlap at all, they tend to sort of avoid each other. So in the wild, they're definitely not seeking each other out to breed. It's probably impossible. I don't want to say never, but probably impossible that you'd find a liger or a tigon in the wild. But they're very common in circuses. They used to be really common in zoos because they're novel. They're something interesting.
Yeah.
But they also probably wouldn't survive in the wild because tigers and lions are both so adapted to live in their specific habitats and hunt specific things that having a hybrid of those different traits wouldn't be as successful as having those highly specialized traits.
So there's nowhere in the world where a lion and a tiger live together?
There are Asiatic lions. They're not as common anymore. Oh. But for example, in Sri Lanka, there are tigers and there are lions. Mm-hmm. Not as common anymore, but you could find lions in the same areas that you'd find tigers. You just wouldn't find tigers in Africa, where you're yeah. really used to seeing lions.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a tiger in the Lion King.
So, that's a very good point. Okay, so although not super common for tigers and lions to be together, imagine that we are in Sri Lanka and we do have a tiger and a lion together. Would they be enemies? Would they be friends? Would they compete with each other? Like, what would that be like?
So they're both apex predators, so they're competing for similar food. So they wouldn't be friends. Lions are social. They live in prides. So if a lion and a tiger met, the lion would have teammates and buddies to act as backup and secondaries in a fight. The tiger would be alone. Tigers are solitary and territorial in the wild. They don't live in big family groups the way that lions do.
They live all by themselves?
They live all by themselves. Yeah, they're only with other tigers. That's how they prefer it. Like, wow. Tigers are pretty tough predators. They don't need help. They don't need help hunting. It means more space, more food for just themselves. They don't have to share. So if a lion and a tiger met, they'd probably just avoid each other. But if they actually had to fight, I get this question all the time from little kids. Who would win in a fight, lion or tiger? And tigers can be bigger than lions. Like, a male lion can weigh anywhere from 400 to 500 pounds. But a tiger, depending on the type of tiger, could be 300 to 1,000 pounds. So if the biggest type of tiger meets an average lion one-on-one, the tiger would probably win. But lions are never alone. They fight in prides. Like, they hunt in prides. They do everything in prides. So, yeah, maybe the lion would win.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But they tend to avoid each other in countries okay. where they would both live in the same areas.
They have no desire to even want to fight.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't benefit them.
Yeah, they're not. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do tigers know where the other ones are? How do they live alone without running into each other? Like, how do they mark their territory? Are they like roommates and they just take a pen and they just draw a line down the middle of the room and
knock on the door?
Exactly. Like, this is your side, this is my side. Like, what do they do?
Yeah, pretty much. So tigers' territories are as big as they need to be in order to find mates, find food, find shelter and water. So if those things aren't very available, a tiger will have a huge territory, like hundreds of square miles. If those things are readily available, a tiger will have a very small territory. So the tigers will actually walk the perimeter of their territory. They'll patrol the perimeter, and they'll claw trees. They'll stand up on their back legs and claw trees to make a very visible sign that, like, hey, this is my signpost, my territory, do not cross my boundary. They also spray urine up on trees. Nicole just gagged. to warn other tigers to stay away. They even have these scent pads in their feet, so they'll rub their feet on the ground around trees to leave a scent marker for other tigers. So a lot of their communication is olfactory. They'll leave all these scent signs for each other. But tigers are also very vocal. I feel like a lot of people don't know that. They think tigers are either silent, like these silent, majestic creatures, yeah. or they're roaring. People don't realize that tigers make all these sounds.
I think of a
lion
roaring, but I feel like right. I don't really think about a tiger roaring often.
Right. So lions roar to mark their territory. That's basically their vocal cue to other prides. This is my area, stay away.
Yeah.
Tigers don't roar for the same reason. Tigers roar as a last resort. That's like their signal that they're very upset and they're about to attack and they're oh. feeling extremely threatened and vulnerable. So yeah. tiger roaring is not a good thing. That's not something you ever want to hear if you're like backpacking somewhere in
Asia.
Oh
my God.
But tigers make all of these other sounds
a lot of which lions and other cats don't make. So tigers will actually find their mates by making, like, a Marco Polo call, basically. They make this really long, deep call to attract a female, or to, if the tiger is a female, to attract a male, basically to the perimeter of their two territories so they can mate. So they'll breed for, like, 3 to 5 days, and then they'll split back to their territories.
So they still respect each other's space, even when they've decided that they're going to mate. But they don't mate for life, like you
said. They don't mate for life,
yeah. So they mate just because, just for fun.
Right, right. So if you hear...
Natural instinct.
Right, exactly. So if you hear this sound when tiger's getting ready to have some sexy time.
Ooh.
So this sound travels for over a mile. So this is that Marco Polo call. So typically a female or male will make the sound, the other tiger will make it back, and they'll basically, like, triangulate each other's positions, basically, based on where the sound is coming from.
How long
from.
Does that go on for?
As long as it takes to find the mate.
Like, days? Possibly?
It could be days, yeah. With the tigers that I work with, when a female's in estrus, the males and females will call back and forth to each other the whole time the female's in estrus.
Wow.
So the tiger house is just echoing with these calls almost 24 hours a day when a female is in estrus and ready to breed.
So the male tiger knows, he can smell it, he can sense it. So mm-hmm. is that when he'll start doing the call? It's not just because, you know,
he's right. in it's the mood. Right, it's not just like, hey, ladies, anyone out there? Anyone out there? No,
it's, yeah. he can it's smell not like her. Tinder for tigers or anything like
right.
that.
Right, exactly.
Okay. It's he's specifically not just, like, for breeding. Okay.
Right, yeah. So he can smell that a female's in estrus. She's spraying all over the place, basically, to let any male know, hey, I'm ready to have some babies. Okay.
So the male tiger picks up on that, and then he starts doing this, like, a bay bay.
Okay. Yeah, they call to find each other.
Yeah. Wow. So you would say the tigers really respect each other's boundaries, right? What about, like, babies? At what point does a baby cub go off and then find his own territory and circle off and then say, like, no, mom, you can't come over?
Mm-hmm. So, big bite of brownie. So after the male's done breeding with the female, he leaves. His job is done. He doesn't even know if he had cubs. Like, he will never see his cubs in the wild.
Oh, my God. They never meet their dad.
No. It's actually, there's been all these photos and videos lately because there have actually been some wild male tigers who've been seen with cubs, which is such an unusual thing that it's all over the news.
Whoa.
So, typically, males have nothing to do with raising their cubs. There's no alimony, nothing.
Dead beat dad.
Yeah. Their job is done once they bred the female. Mom's pregnancy is typically 3.5 months. So, really, really quick pregnancy.
Lucky them.
Yeah, right? I don't want to be pregnant for 9 months. And then, after she gives birth, it's usually an average litter of 3 to 4, but they can have 1 to 7.
Okay.
And then after she gives birth, it depends on the mom. She'll typically raise the cub for anywhere from 1 year to 3 years, depending on how experienced that mom is, how much she needs to teach them, how quickly that cub picks up on hunting skills. And then mom actually pushes the cubs away.
Wow.
So when mom is done nursing, and she's like, okay, I've taught you everything that you need to know.
I've done my job.
I've done my job. Go be an adult tiger. Typically, the boys will leave first, so if she has multiple cubs in a litter, boys will leave first, and they'll go off and find a territory of their own, and then girls will stay with mom a little bit longer, and then they'll leave too. And then once those tiger cubs leave mom, they never see mom again.
Wow.
So they're very independent from a young age.
It makes me really sad to think about everyone just leaving and just drawing a circle in the sand and then just being, like, all by myself for the rest of my life.
Totally different from you.
Yeah, so, okay, so you have these tigers, right, and they're hunting animals that are relatively big. They're, like, deer size. You imagine they must be at least 80 pounds or so.
Right.
But they're doing it on their own, right? So they hunt this deer, they kill it, they start eating it. Are they going to eat all 80 pounds at once? Like, what do they do with it?
No, tigers are gorge and fast eaters. So they'll make a kill, and then they'll gorge on as much as they can. So tigers in the wild will eat anywhere from 12 to 60 pounds in a sitting, depending on the size of the tiger and how hungry they were before. And then normally they will cache that carcass. So they'll hide it somewhere. They'll bury it or put it under a bush or up in a tree or something to keep it safe from other predators.
and then they'll come back to it for the next few days until that carcass is completely gone. And then they basically fast. They don't eat for a while they're digesting. And then when they're hungry again, they'll expend a whole bunch of energy to go on another hunt. But tigers aren't that successful at hunting, even though they're these ambush predators, they're apex predators, so they're at the top of the food chain. It takes a lot of energy to hunt, so they're only successful, I think you were reading, like 10%
of the time. 10% of the time, which would be crazy. So exhausting.
Imagine going to, like, a restaurant, and 90% of the time, your plate gets slapped out of your hand before you can eat it. Like, that would be so frustrating.
Yeah, that would be really frustrating.
Yeah, so anytime they do make a kill, they're very protective of it.
So how often do they actually have to hunt or actually have to eat? You're saying they're fasting for periods of time, but, like, are they hunting once a week and they're going a couple days without eating in between? Are they hunting? Like,
yeah, it depends on the tiger and what they've killed. So if they've killed something huge, like a big sambar deer, you know, that weighs a couple hundred pounds, then they might not need to hunt for another week, 2 weeks maybe.
Wow.
But if they're hunting something really small, like a bird or a small hoofed animal, or another small carnivore, something like that, yeah, they might need to eat again in another 2-3 days.
Okay. But they can go a little bit of, they can go longer without eating than we can without eating.
Yeah. And I think they're more used to going without eating than we are. Like, I might need another brownie again in 30 seconds.
I know. I just had dinner, we're eating dessert, and I'm already like, we're going to have a midnight snack. Like,
right. And when's breakfast?
Exactly. So I can't imagine going days. I can't imagine, first of all, working that hard to have to eat.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay, so they kill this animal, and they might eat on it for the next couple of days or even to a week. They don't have refrigerators. They don't know to salt their meat to make sure it doesn't go bad. Like, are we ever worried that these animals are eating meat that's, like, going bad, and they could potentially be, like, getting diseases from this?
Is that safe? Absolutely. So, no, it's not fully safe, and that's why tigers in the wild have such a short lifespan. So tigers in the wild are lucky to live to 12, 14 years old because of predation from other carnivores, because of habitat loss, because of disease. So if they eat spoiled meat, or if they even get like a tiny cut that gets infected, or they get an infected tooth or something like that, that there are no veterinarians taking care of them in the wild. Yeah. So they could succumb to a really simple disease or a parasite. Tigers in human care in zoos tend to live into their late teens, early 20s, because with 24-hour vet care and food that's pre-processed and checked for parasites and diseases and things like that, we can prolong their lives so much more than wild tigers.
So interesting. So, okay, so you have this tiger who's been living in the zoo and you guys are feeding and taking care of it. Do you feel like they're pampered? Do they lose all of their natural instincts by being living in captivity for years?
Oh, they're totally pampered, but they still have all of their natural instincts. So, yeah, so some of the time the tigers are really pampered. Like if it rains outside, they are at the door or under shelter and clearly saying, like, excuse me, it's raining out here. Like, please let me inside.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know me? I'm the celebrity of this zoo. Like, let me inside now. But other times, even though they get fed processed meat all the time and bones and things that are already dead, they don't have to hunt, a wayward duck lands in the exhibit or a gopher pops up in the exhibit and it is over for that duck or gopher. Worst day ever. And it's just amazing. Like these tigers were never taught to hunt. Their moms didn't have to teach them to hunt because they were born in human care. We clearly didn't teach them to hunt and they still have that wild instinct immediately. They're like, there's no hesitation.
Wow.
And they make the kill quickly and efficiently, and they eat it. Like, they know exactly what to do with what they kill. It's incredible.
Wow. So even tigers that are, from day one, with humans, bottle-fed, taken care of, still have that ability, that natural instinct to kill, to hunt, to eat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have watched a tiger that I bottle-fed and hand-raised and worked with all these other keepers to help him grow up into this beautiful juvenile tiger that he is now. I've watched him, like, with no hesitation, kill birds that land in his exhibit. Yeah. And nobody taught him how to do that. Like, he was around humans for the whole beginning part of his life. And yet he still has all of those wild instincts.
So who are all these people, then, that have these tigers as pets? I see YouTube videos and Instagram videos and pictures of people cuddling with tigers, playing with tigers. And really interesting fact, kind of statistics change based on the report that you're reading. But basically anywhere between 5,000 and 12,000 privately owned, quote, pet tigers in the United States alone. And that's not including zoos. That's people who own property and have a pet tiger. And 2,000 to 4,000 of them just in Texas alone. So how are these people taking care of these tigers that would kill them in an instant, it sounds like?
Right. Yeah, so it's crazy. Texas has the world's second largest tiger population after India. And most of those tigers are legally held as pets. So Texas, as a state, doesn't have any exotic animal regulations. So people who have tigers as pets in Texas aren't violating any state laws. But they're violating all of these federal and international statutes about having an endangered species as a pet. So these people often have no idea what they're getting into. Like, a tiger as a cub looks cute and cuddly and playful and like, oh my goodness, I want to squish its face. And then it grows into a 500-800 pound behemoth that eats meat. So a lot of these people either don't realize what they're getting into, and then things end really poorly for them. Unfortunately, a lot of these tigers that are kept as pets are only found out about because they've escaped or they have mauled or killed someone.
There are instances where the tiger escapes.
Oh, yeah. There's tons of tiger escapes that happen all over the U.S. It's very common.
What would you do if you were walking down the street and all of a sudden there's a tiger?
People call the police, and then
The police, what are the police going to do?
Right, they call
the police. They're like, no thank you.
Right.
Sorry, I'm off.
Right, and animal control is used to dealing with, like, people's escaped tabby cats, not a 500-pound tiger walking down the street. So some states actually have one day a year where you can turn in an illegal pet, no questions asked.
Wow, that's really
And then
nice.
They'll rehome it to a zoo or a sanctuary. So they find out about these tiger pets, these, like, backyard pets, through those sort of give them up days. Or
pet return day.
Pet return day, yeah. Like, whoops, this got way bigger than I was expecting. Like the pigs, like, people return them because they don't realize how big they were going to be. But then a lot of these tigers, if they are confiscated or if they are surrendered, are in such bad shape because people are feeding them, like, donuts and beef jerky and whatever they have laying around. And tigers are carnivores. They're not just carnivores. They're obligate carnivores. That means their digestive system is made for only eating meat. So they can't eat all of this processed food. They can't eat sugar. They can't eat all these preservatives. It's really bad for them. And a lot of people who keep tigers as pets will actually have them declawed and defanged so that they're slightly safer. They're still not safe.
Yeah, even still, if they 800 don't pounds if he punches you in the face.
Right, yeah. Like, he can still kill you without teeth or claws. Easily. But that means that that tiger can never have a great life as a tiger, even if it's rescued and sent to a sanctuary or a zoo because it was so malnourished or mistreated earlier in its life. And it's not like these people are malicious. Like, all these people have tigers as pets. Either really love tigers or
I'm sure
really
in some
cases,
it might be a bad situation.
Yeah, but I don't goes in thinking I'm going to abuse this tiger. They want this awesome animal that they love.
Yeah, it sounds
in their
awesome.
Life.
I can imagine, like, I wish that my dogs were bigger and bigger and bigger and want to snuggle with them. So having like this big gigantic tiger that, like, you just, like, lay on and you ride him and you snuggle him and you love him, like, that sounds great.
Right. But, and the problem is, even if your tiger is incredibly loving and is wonderful, all it takes is one natural instinct to kick in one time.
Yeah.
Like Siegfried and Roy, everybody's heard about them, right?
Of course.
It was on the circus for years and years, and Siegfried and Roy hand-raised all of those tigers from the time they were teeny tiny cubs, and it didn't matter. It took one instance, one time for Roy's life to never be the same. So no matter how bonded you think you are with your tiger, it's still not a safe animal to have in your house, in your backyard. Like, these animals are incredibly strong. The tigers I work with, I've watched them pick up these barrels filled with cement and put them on shelves above my head with no effort. Like, they're way stronger than a dog the same size would be. And their bite force is just incredible. So, have you read anything about animal bite force?
No, I'm scared to know, honestly.
Okay, so our bite force, like if we chomp down really hard on a piece of steak or something, our bite force is about 150, maybe 200 pounds per square inch.
Okay.
Okay, that so that sounds like a lot
more than I thought.
Right? Like, that's a lot of pounds in a square inch, right? Like, if you bite really hard, you might chip a tooth, but you might be able to exert, like, 200 pounds per square inch of force. A tiger exerts 1,000 pounds per square inch of force, which is so astronomically more than what we're used to.
Oh, my God.
They're actually not the strongest bite in the world, though. The strongest bite, we can talk about in our next episode.
Are the crocodiles?
It's crocodiles!
Oh, my gosh.
Or our previous episode, depending on how we post this.
At one point, you'll hear about crocodiles.
Right, yeah. Sometime. Maybe you've already heard about crocodiles. But yeah, crocodiles, saltwater crocodiles, have the strongest bite in the world.
Okay, so that's a really strong bite and sounds like it's crazy dangerous. I would hope that the tigers will let you know very clearly when they're angry and when it's going to happen. Some big kind of scary growl. But is there any way to ever know that a tiger is happy?
Yeah, they'll make a different vocalization. So tigers can't purr the way that house cats can. They don't have the right vocal cords, the right voice box. So instead they make a sound called a chuff, which sounds like this.
Sounds like a horse.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like the tiger saying the letter F while blowing air out through its mouth.
That was me trying it. That wasn't a tiger. That's Elise. I'm kind of just rolling my tongue too much.
Make an F sound. Yeah, there you go. It's like a stuttery F.
So that's their version of purring.
That's their version of purring, yeah.
And you have heard them do that? They like you and they purr to you, these tigers you work with?
Yeah, so the tigers that are most comfortable with people and tolerate me the most will chuff to me, but typically cubs will chuff to their mom, mom chuffs to the cubs, and then mates will chuff to each other. So it's like a contented, happy greeting noise.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah. It's a good sound. I actually forget that all animals don't chuff, so when I see dogs and other animals, I chuff to them now, because I'm so used to hanging out with tigers. And then I remember, oh, right, that's a tiger thing, that's not a dog thing.
Do you think really the tigers recognize the noise you're making as their noise?
Yeah, because I'll do it, and they'll do it right back. Oh, so it's like an echo, like call and response, kind of.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Don't let it be confused with their Sexy Time Marco Polo.
Right. No, I can't do Sexy Time Marco Polo. I don't know how to make that sound. That's as good as I can do.
Okay, so we know the noise that they make. They're doing this chuff noise, you called it? Okay. So the tigers are here. They're chuffing. They're happy. They're having a good time. What are they doing when they're happy? Do they have fun? Do they play? Or do they just... What do they do?
Yeah, cubs and juveniles absolutely play in the wild or in human care. And then tigers actually really like swimming.
No, they don't.
They
cats
do
not like the water.
Tigers do. Yeah,
no way.
There's a couple cat species that actually like the water. There's fishing cats, a couple other species, and tigers. That's it.
Wow.
Otherwise, most cats typically don't like the water.
They
like,
play with the faucet a little bit.
They play with the faucet, yeah, and they'll like hiss at fish. And that's about it. But tigers actually completely submerge themselves. Like, they will go under the water, and when they're hunting, tigers will even flush their prey into lakes and rivers because they are better swimmers than their prey.
Whoa.
So they use it as a hunting tactic. They use it to their advantage. But, like, a contented tiger on a hot day normally looks like a hippo. Like, their head and their nostrils are out of the water, and that's about it.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, they just hang out. It's like their little hot tub time.
Oh, that's so sweet. Uh-huh. I had no idea.
Yeah, in the wild, too. So a lot of times, if people are going on safaris in the wild, a lot of the times you don't see a tiger unless they want to be seen.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time tigers are hanging out in water.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah.
Do they eat fish too?
Yeah, they can. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So cool.
Tigers will eat just about any meat they can catch.
As long as it's meat.
As long as it's meat. Yeah. No, like, pineapple or coconuts or anything.
So there's not just like a tiger laying in a pool with a pina colada.
Right.
Just like relaxing.
I wish. That would be my perfect life.
So I love the idea of these tigers just living a super carefree life. They're top of the food chain. They're swimming in pools. They're eating whatever they want, whenever they want. I mean, 10% of the time since they're not great at hunting, but still, you get it. They're pretty much living a carefree life, right? Like, they don't have any wild predators, correct? Like, there are really no other animals that are going to hurt these tigers, right? They're right. pretty safe.
Yeah.
So, do they have any threats then? I guess, are they living as carefree a life as we would think that they should be living, considering the fact that they're the top of the food chain?
Sadly, no. And it's so depressing to talk about. But all tigers are either endangered or critically endangered, depending on the subspecies of tiger. So we mentioned that there are fewer than 5,000 tigers total left in the wild, and it's probably closer to 3,500, somewhere around that number. Tigers are endangered because of humans. They're endangered because of habitat destruction, habitat fragmentation, and poaching. And there's a couple really compelling examples. So Bengal tigers live in the Sundarban mangrove habitat, so in this very watery tree-like habitat in part of India, and this habitat is threatened by sea level rising. So the sea level rising is basically destroying these mangrove habitats that the tigers depend on, and the sea levels are rising as a result of climate change. So something that's happening on the other side of the world is actually affecting tiger habitat in India. In Russia, where the Amur, also called Siberian tigers, live, human-caused mortality accounts for 75 to 85% of Amur tiger deaths.
Oh my God.
Every year. And there are only about 350 to 400 of these Amur tigers left in the wild, total. And it's estimated that about 30 or more Amur tigers are poached in the Russian Far East every single year. And they're poached for traditional Chinese medicine. A lot of Chinese folklore medicines use tiger body parts as remedies. So tiger whiskers, tiger skin, tiger claws. And no part of a tiger has medicinal properties. So using ground up tiger claws in your tea is not going to have the same benefits that Viagra would. But people in these other countries are using tiger parts to mimic aspirin, Viagra, things like that. So actually, a male tiger can sell for over $10,000 on the black market and because of this poaching culture. And unfortunately, a lot of Russia is logged. And every time a logging road is built, it increases poaching because it's giving poachers access to these tigers. So between 1992 and 2000, scientists looked at the fates of all of these Amur tigers that they put radio collars on. And in areas where there weren't any roads, 100% of the collared Amur tigers survived between 1992 and 2000. So in those 8 years.
Well, that's amazing.
100% survived. Right. That's awesome. In areas with secondary roads, which means roads that aren't used that frequently, that aren't maintained every year, but are still there.
Like dirt roads.
Okay. Yeah. 89% of collared tigers survived.
Better than zero.
Yeah, right. But worse. Not great, right?
Not great.
Like, no, we're going down. It's a downward trend, but still not terrible. In areas with primary roads, roads that are maintained all the time, roads that are used really frequently, only 55% of collared tigers survived. So the poaching is a huge problem all across Russia and other countries. And poaching actually isn't even the worst threat facing tigers in the wild right now.
What is the worst
Which
threat?
Is hard to believe.
Yeah.
So the worst threat is something that you can find in your kitchen, in your bathroom, in your garage. It's this product called palm oil. And palm oil is the most widely produced edible oil. So it's more widely produced than vegetable oil or olive oil. Over 44 million metric tons are produced in Indonesia and Malaysia every year.
So what does this cooking oil that I may or may not have, pretty sure I don't, but who knows? What does my cooking oil have to do with tigers?
Okay, so palm oil is in so many things. It's in makeup, it's in shampoo, it's in conditioner, toothpaste, laundry detergent, and processed foods like chips, candies, cookies. It is in so much
stuff. Oh my God,
stuff.
I definitely have chips and cookies and shampoo. And
I do too. It's hard to avoid, right? Okay, so palm oil is affecting tigers and rhinos and orangutans and all the other animals that live in Indonesia because palm oil is often grown unsustainably. So rainforest habitat is cut to the ground and burned to make room for these giant palm oil farms, which is basically pushing out all of the wildlife species that depend on these habitats. So there, because of these palm oil plantations, between 1990 and 2010, 37% of Sumatra's primary forests were logged. Between 2000 and 2012, 17% of Sumatra was deforested. So this palm oil is creating just massive amounts of land that aren't livable for wildlife. Luckily, there's a way to grow palm oil sustainably. So there's a way to grow it amongst the rainforest plants, so you don't have to do this slash and burn agriculture. It's more expensive and time consuming to do, so a lot of plantation owners don't grow it that way. But there's a way that we can all influence how it's grown in Indonesia and Malaysia. So almost all of us have smartphones now, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. So if you go in the app store and you type in palm oil, you can download a free app. There's a lot of really good choices. I love the one that the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo puts out. And with that free app, you can get a lot of information about palm oil, what products have it, what products don't. But the cool thing is you can actually use your smartphone with that app to scan the barcodes of products the next time you go shopping, and it will pop up on the app whether or not that product is tiger and orangutan friendly. So if a company or a brand has pledged to only use sustainably grown palm oil, they will pop up as tiger and orangutan friendly. So just by being a conscientious consumer in the US, in Europe, in Mexico, in Canada, wherever you live, you can actually help save tigers in Indonesia thousands of miles away, which is so cool. Like, this, it's amazing that we, like, as consumers can use our purchasing power to decide how these companies are growing products, which could actually save tigers.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I just looked up the app as you were telling me to look up the app. And in case anybody else wants to download it, it's called Sustainable Palm Oil Shopping. And it is brought to you by the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. And the icon is a really cute little green and white silhouette of an orangutan kind of hanging from a tree. So it's really easy to spot. And it was completely free to download.
Yeah. And if you don't like that one for any reason, I love this one. But if you don't, there's other good free ones too that are available. But it's really easy to use and it could help save a tiger's life thousands and thousands of miles away, which is amazing.
Yeah. I had absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's like an easy thing to do from home. It's not like you have to travel anywhere or make huge life changes. You just buy a different brand.
Yeah. I'm going to scan all my things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I downloaded it, I went around the house and scanned it, scanned absolutely everything and started like vowing to never buy so many things again. But companies are changing because of this app. So some companies and some brands have pledged to be either palm oil free or sustainable palm oil only. So if you find a brand that's pledged that, you don't have to scan all of their products. Like, you know that, oh, that brand is safe and wildlife friendly. It's like now we're also used to buying dolphin friendly tuna because people years and years ago used their purchasing power to say, hey, like, we don't want dolphin parts in our tuna. Please make it dolphin friendly. And now companies have. And most of the tuna that you find on the shelves now is dolphin friendly because of something exactly like this. We just have more technology now with an app instead
it's
of
so
like
much easier now.
Letters
process.
To Congress.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think that we as humans are having this effect on tigers. This is a creature that we idolize. We go to the zoo and the first stop we want to see is the tiger. Although tigers all have different stripes, it's like our fingerprints, they all have this kind of cluster of stripes on their forehead, and the Chinese believe that this cluster resembles their character for king. So they literally compare these tigers to a king.
So and the literal king of the jungle.
Exactly. Like, we think that the lion's the king of the jungle, but to the Chinese, it's the tigers.
Tiger.
They are depicted with the word king on their forehead. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't really get much more idealistic than that, right?
Right.
And at the same time, we're hurting them. It's just wild. And also all these other tigers that we completely idolize, right? We have Tony the Tiger. We're grown up seeing his image, buying his cereal. We love him.
Frosted Flakes.
There's Calvin and Hobbes. There's Tigger from Winnie the Pooh. There's Raja from Aladdin.
Oh, Raja.
I know, right? The Chinese zodiac symbol, tigers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sports team mascots. The national animal of India, Bangladesh, Malaysia, South Korea. Tigers are everywhere.
And even in our snack.
Yeah, which was really, really yummy. And we each ate way too many brownies today.
They're at least half gone and she made a whole pan. So maybe on our next episode, we run like a cheetah or something. Like, work off the brownie. Our treat will be celery.
Yeah, we'll have to do a healthy snack next time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see. We'll also post this recipe on the Facebook page for you guys to try out yourself with a picture as well. Yeah. They actually came out pretty good. So
they look professionally done. Nicole is underselling herself like usual. They look amazing.
Well, thank you. And thanks again for joining us, and hope to see you guys next time. We won't see you.
Yeah.
Hope to talk to you. Hope you hear us.
Yeah.
We have no idea whether you're out there or not, but maybe you are.
If you are, comment. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, definitely post questions, comments, anything that we may have missed or any mistakes we may have made. We definitely love to hear your feedback.
Yeah, and we'll cite our sources again on our Facebook page, too.
Yeah,
so tune in next time.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.